Welcome to CompTIA's Shark Bites podcast with Alan Shark, Executive Director at the Public Technology Institute.
Hi there, everyone. Welcome to another episode of CompTIA's Shark Bites, where we explore tech leadership and government. So hi, again, I'm Alan Shark, Executive Director of CompTIA's Public Technology Institute, or better known as simply as PTI. As you may know, we present new episodes every other week, usually posted on Thursday afternoons. Please consider subscribing wherever you get your podcasts so you won't miss an episode. Today, we have a return guest by popular demand. And that's kind of a rarity. We have so many topics to cover, but there's one person I could probably have every other episode and always make it current. And because cybersecurity is on everyone's mind these days, we turn to one of the nation's top thought action leaders regarding cybersecurity for state and local governments. Dan Lohrmann is Chief Strategist and Chief Security Officer at Security Mentor, Inc. He's an author, blogger, featured speaker. Dan served as Chief Security Officer and Deputy within Michigan's Department of Technology Management and Budget. He oversaw all aspects of cybersecurity, physical security, department emergency management, critical infrastructure protection within the state government. And prior to that, Dan serves as Chief Technology Officer and Deputy Director for Infrastructure Services, also for the state of Michigan. So, Dan, you have certainly established your reputation, your credentials, and you're working for a great company with Security Mentor. As I understand it, this is a company that you're part of that does an awful lot in preparing local governments and employees and state governments, for that matter, to better prepare, to educate folks, to prevent many of the things we're going to talk about today. Does that sum it up pretty well?
It does, Alan. And thank you. What did I say? You're too kind to me. I really appreciate being invited back. It's a true honor. You're a legend in the industry. Love everything you're doing. And it's great to be back with you. I think that does sum it up well. We do security awareness training at Security Mentor, do some consulting, but really helping governments be proactive. It's just like you said, provide training that's brief, frequent, focused, teaching people things they don't already know and making that gamified and engaging. So yeah, that's really what we do.
And you certainly get it, and I appreciate it. So let's begin where, I guess, what's on the minds of most people today. You know, every time we think we've seen the worst possible threat, we see something worse, and that's becoming kind of a trend. We thought things were terrible when Target got breached. And then we thought, oh my God, and then Home Depot. And those were the commercial pieces. But then we heard about OPM and what happened there in the federal government space. That was even worse. So many local governments of all sizes have learned to rely on managed services or automation to help manage things. And so I want to flag something that I know is in everyone's minds on the front end. And then I'd like to spend more of the time on the back end. So on the front end, the new actors that I see are attacking what is now referred to as what? Supply chain. And we're thinking of SolarWinds, which happened last year, which was a real eye opener because this is a company's that's, you know, premier software was monitoring all these systems across the board in the private sector and many big federal agencies, state government, local governments. That was bad enough. And then all of a sudden we saw this thing with Kaseya. And it was like, wait a minute, this sounds very similar. I know of at least two local governments, minimal, that were impacted by this ransomware attack. So the question that I have is for all the governments that are out there who subscribe to either managed services or they subscribe to, you know, automated software to manage, understand better their network and operations, this is kind of scary because these are the tools, software that they turn to better protect themselves. So in many ways, these people that I talk to on a daily basis feel far more vulnerable, far more insecure than before. Is it justified and are better things that we could do to protect ourselves based on these new threats?
Yeah, you start right off with the hard question, but it's you're right on. I mean, absolutely, it is not unique to state and local governments either. The whole world is struggling with this right now, but absolutely, it is hitting and managed service providers, as we know, it hit the Colonial Pipeline, the ransomware, we did JBS, you know, from meat to, you know, the latest to oil and gas, but, you know, really hitting really the supply chain across the board. Yes, I mean, it is a huge issue. I mean, there are some standard pat answers, but there's no one silver bullet. Alan, I can give some tips. We can talk about some of those. I think, you know, clearly you need to do your homework. You know, you need to ask your MS managed service providers, what do you have in place? How are you doing it? How are you doing, you know, the list that you and I have talked about in the past, you know, from two-factor, multi-factor authentication, not just using usernames and passwords. How are you doing? We're talking more detail about backups, but how are you doing patch management? How are you updating vulnerabilities and looking for vulnerabilities? And in the cases you gave, some of these were 0 days. They infiltrated those MSPs, and then that's how the local government, the state government, the private sector company got hit. So, I mean, clearly you've got to have, you know, contract provisions in place to be thinking about this. You need to do your homework and ask these questions. You know, how are you protecting yourselves? I mean, you can't just assume that your MSP has everything in place to address these issues. And those same checklists that you see out there that the cybersecurity framework lays out, NIST lays out, that we're seeing, you know, Australian government has what they call the essential 8 maturity items. There's a whole list of items we can, you know, you can point to at CompTIA. I can point at PTI. I can point to as well. And we have blogs about this. You know, can't assume that your managed service provider, you know, are actually doing those things. And the other thing you hear a lot, we always talk about people, process, and technology. And it's and I hear a lot of times, oh yeah, we did that already, or you know, we did that back in 2017. It's hard to keep doing it over and over and over again. We always have heard 100 times. Most listeners have heard that. You know, bad actors only have to be right once, right? So just because you were doing it, had a great team 3 years ago, you had a great process 3 years ago, you did a great risk assessment 2 years ago, you did something else during COVID. I mean, every day is a new day, and the bad actors are always changing their tactics. They're always updating it. And as soon as you put up something that stopped them yesterday, tomorrow, they're going to try something different. So you really do need to have, you know, a solution that is complete and that addresses those different components and really look at, you know, it's different thing. You know, you can have cyber insurance, you can have contract revisions around your managed service providers. But I think the eye test, just asking basic set questions when these things we're going to be talking about is key. And being comfortable with, if they do have an incident, how are they going to respond? How are they going to recover?
So I have a follow-up question that's kind of political, perhaps, but yeah. I'm a big fan, at least conceptually, of StateRAMP. Yeah. Because right now, local governments, state and local governments, really, you know, they could go to a large provider that provides cloud services, managed services to the federal government. But in order to get the FedRAMP seal of approval, they have to do an enormous volume of business. And there's a lot of smaller players that are excellent. So my question to you is, as StateRAMP, and I know you've had a role with them, you know, ramps up literally. And again, I'm a fan. I think the concept is fantastic. This seems to be a missing piece. Will this help local governments and even state government leaders have a better sense of security by knowing that these companies are adhering to basic principles set forth by StateRAMP?
And the answer absolutely is yes. I mean, listeners need to go to stateramp.org. They need to read up, they need to learn about it. They need to take steps. It's gonna take some time. It's not gonna happen, you know, quickly. So we're talking sadly about years, not months, for all the different services to get there. But, you know, a lot of people I've heard, you know, elevator pitches, one-liners like, oh, well, you know, Microsoft or Google or Amazon or, you know, I use AWS. And again, those are great companies. I'm not knocking any of them. But, you know, say, well, Microsoft does security better than us or Amazon or Google. But, you know, a lot of cases, your servers are in the cloud or your MSPs are in the cloud and different applications are different. And they may be using those services, or you might be using an MSP that utilizes those services. And those services themselves are not configured or kept configured securely. And so, yes, I mean, these configurations, the different applications, and it's not just by company, it's by individual application that you're using with StateRAMP and also FedRAMP. But yeah, I do think it's a solution. As you know, I'm on the board with StateRAMP, and I'm actually very active with the technical committee, subcommittee with StateRAMP. So I do think it's something that will, you know, continue to strengthen our security posture in local governments and state governments as well. Sadly, I think it's going to take a little bit of time. I don't, you know, it's, you know, is that something you can do right now in, you know, August 2021? It's getting there. You know, we're having people join. We're getting systems certified. But the challenge is, you know, many of them are now into the process, and it could take into 2022, 2023 before they get to where they need to be. But yes, that is a medium to long-term solution for many organizations.
That's super. And for those that are listening to this podcast who are not familiar with StateRAMP, we did a interview with the executive director of StateRAMP probably about a month ago. So if you look at our listings, you'll see it. I'm a big fan, although my only disappointment is there's no local government representative on their board, at least yet.
We'll get
so,
there.
So one more thing on the front end, and that is, you know, when we talk about the lists and the things that we can do, more recently I'm hearing about being able to provision certain web browsers to sit either outside of the network or in some kind of sandbox environment, so that if something happens where an employee, you know, clicks on that dastardly URL, that it's somewhat isolated. Is this an emerging best practice, or has this been around for a long time?
You know, I think it has been around for a while, but it continues to evolve. It is a best practice, and it's growing in popularity. So, you know, I think sandboxing, we talked about that, you know, 6-7 years ago with mobile devices, right? And you know, people having BYOD and sandboxes. And I mean, so the concept is not necessarily new. Implementation, new tools, there's a number of great tool sets out there that can look at everything from email, but all your connectivity, and can really look at using machine learning as well. Basically, as you put you in a sandbox, can create more secure spaces and prevent lateral movement if somebody does get hacked. Also can look at, you know, we all talk about clicking on links but you know, these targeted attacks, these spear phishing and these whaling, you know, going after the big fish, if you will, is growing. And so, I mean, I can name a bunch of companies. I want to just rattle off companies here, but really something that people need to think about. Certainly training and awareness is a huge piece of this, helping your staff know what to do, but also having new tool sets. Main one company, Egress, is one that does a great job. But people that can actually look at your incoming email and look at outgoing, you know, send the right file to the wrong person, the wrong file to the right person, you know, and people make mistakes, and the ability to use machine learning, artificial intelligence, to be able to track that kind of thing. There's a lot of different tool sets that people are using, and clicking on links, looking at those links, you know, making sure that if people do make mistakes, that they don't cause, you know, huge challenges like ransomware.
Yeah. So I'd like to switch gears now. It seems that the upfront challenges are enormous. And in no way am I saying we shouldn't try on all the things that you've mentioned and more. But at the back end, there's so many times when someone is paying the ransomware because for some reason their backup is also infected. So to me, the strategy should never be just about the front end. The strategy has to be on the back end as well, maybe even more so, because we're trying to protect data. And the idea that we could restore in a reasonable amount of time, to me, is the utmost of importance. Why are we failing with something as simple, at least superficially, as backup? I know it's more complicated the larger, it's like there's so many different departments, there's so many different, especially for the large enterprises. What are we missing here in backups?
Yeah, great question. And it's one that I would point you to, a timely one that we're, you know, as we're recording this. Just literally yesterday, Brian Krebs posted an article that I would highly encourage people to go. If you don't read Brian Krebs, obviously he's one of the best known security bloggers out there, but don't want to pay ransom gangs, test your backups. And so many people think they have tested backups. He lists a number of reasons why people, they do backups, they think they're ready, they don't actually test them. And they get into an issue where when they actually never actually tried to restore, they've actually never gone through the whole process of that. And so, when they try and do that, one of the examples he starts with right out of the gate is I'll quote one of this article. It says, suddenly the victim notices they have a couple petabytes of data to restore over the internet. They realize that even with their fast connections, it's going to take 3 months to download all these backup files. Now, that's maybe an extreme case. But, people actually thought through how they're going to restore, if it's cloud storage, those kinds of things. And so, gone through the process, really thought through their connectivity. What will the process be? Who needs to be involved? Another scenario, encrypted backups of their data. They have them, but they discovered the digital key needed to decrypt their backups was stored in the same local file sharing network that got encrypted by the ransomware. Yeah. So now it's like, it's kind of the old, I got the key, the key's in the safe. I don't have the key to the safe, or I can't open the safe. That kind of challenge. And then the third most common impediment to victims' organizations is that the ransomware purveyors manage to corrupt the backups as well. So, the bad actors get in, they're in your network, they're just watching what you're doing. A lot of times they just sit in there, try not to get noticed, watch where people are going, watch where files are going. And I know examples of companies where this has happened, quite a few actually, sadly, where they actually went in, got there were cloud backups, actually had access to the backups, and they actually applied the ransomware to the backups as well. So, basically that challenge of the backups are corrupted or somehow subject to the ransomware. Those are three examples. But just really thinking through, and the article goes and lists others, really thinking through the whole end-to-end process, and actually just, a lot of times we would say, I just assume that, well, the files are there, they're good enough, we have them, we know where to get them, but you actually haven't gone through and thought through really end to end and gone through that whole exercise. And so they're not really prepared if and when they do get ransomware. In some cases, Brian Krebs mentions that people already, have a solution, but it's going to take them so long, they can't be down for, this example, 3 months, right? And so they actually end up paying the ransom as well.
So how do we reduce that time? I mean, we do store tons of data. Some people talk about containerization. They talk about, breaking it up to smaller pieces so that the pieces can be constructed at a faster amount. Are those reasonable strategies?
I think that those are. You can certainly think about that in terms of, segmentation, different critical systems, really not allowing that lateral movement. It's hard because in many cases, especially local governments, have one person who maybe has the keys to the kingdom and has access to all of that, or maybe one or two people. I also think, do you have offsite backups locally that's much faster than, trying to do internet speeds over, your pipe, whatever that pipe may be. Do you have backups available either locally or offsite that you can get to in a matter of hours or even minutes? There are certainly solutions on the market. Again, I can start naming companies, but that'll do like real time, copying files and basically having dual backups, dual systems available real time. But obviously they're very expensive, right? So having almost running, an A and a B kind of switch on, things, so everything is real time storage backed up and separated. So, there are different price points and different range of solutions. I think our vendor community, security community has a range of backup solutions. I think people just really need to think through their different options and meet, and don't just go with, well, we've always done it that way. This has always been the way we've done it. We've used this vendor. Talk to the competitors. get sharpen the pencils. One thing, one strategy I used when I was CISO in Michigan, CTO in Michigan, you know, we were big, give you one quick little story here, sure. Alan, I was a big EMC shop, did a lot of storage, and Michigan still is, by the way. But going back 10 years ago, I brought in one of their competitors, a couple of their competitors, and saved the state, you know, a lot of money, and actually got a better solution because of it. So it never hurts to talk to a couple different options, you know, good old fashioned capitalism, and look at, you know, what other options are available in the market. I know everyone's really busy, so that can be hard. We've always done it this way, but, you know, look at a range. There's a lot of different solutions out there in the backup space. By using a range of options, in this one case, I think I saved the state over $10 million in 3 years and got a more updated architecture by doing that. So your current vendor may actually sharpen their pencil and get you a better price.
So a student asked me a question and I didn't really have an answer. You use the word economics, and maybe because of the success of many of the ransomware attacks of late, they seem to be encouraged to ask more and more money. And it's to the extent they get it, they become more emboldened and ask for more. That suddenly makes some of the solutions more cost justified that might not have been even 6 months ago. So this student said to me, if it's that important to continue operations of business and not worry about the income loss, because governments do process money and transactions, let alone the ability and need to retrieve records. I mean, think of all the state level, all the folks, you know, that need their unemployment benefits or health benefits administered by state agencies, or even at the local level. He said to me, why don't we have a shadow computer system? Why isn't there a system that literally is somewhere else, maybe off the grid most of the time, that could be like an emergency generator, could be brought up in a very short amount of time. And this is kind of a backup as an operating system so that you could be good to go. Well, how should I have answered that student? Is that even plausible today?
I mean, it certainly is plausible. I think the answer that I would give to that student is so often people don't, they still think deep down they don't want to allocate the money to make that proactive step possible. I can tell you in all my years, over 30 years in the cyber industry, leading lots of different organizations, the CISO, CTO, CIO of an agency, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You always try and justify things by cost avoidance, but you know what you avoided from happening, and it always backfired in my face as a CFO. So what they always said, you know, people say, for example, had we not had 9/11, I've seen different studies. I'm talking about, you know, the World Trade Center is going down. And if you add in the Gulf War and everything else, it might have saved our country trillions of dollars, $2 trillion I've heard, $1 to $2 trillion, I've heard $3 trillion. But again, it's like hindsight is 20/20. Nobody wants to say, had, you know, we stopped this, we stopped that, therefore I'm going to give you the money. So my point is, it's very, very hard to get government organizations or any organization to put that money up front proactively, because they don't really believe that it's going to happen to them. So, you know, it's we all hear it, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You could have, you know, I paid a $1 million ransom. What if we had used that money proactively beforehand? But sadly, you go to those same boards, those same organizations, those same cities or counties or state governments, and you ask for that money up front, and usually it's not there. They won't pay for that extra total backup solution. I will throw this in here real quick, Alan, as well. A lot of people say, well, that's what we have cyber insurance for. Well, the cyber insurance market is totally up in the air right now as well. You know, it's like, you know, there's so much ransomware payments that have happened in the last several years, and it's gotten worse. The premiums are going way up, and the coverage amounts are going down, and the number of provisions that people have to meet are changing. Now, I'm not saying I'm against cyber insurance, far be it. I work with a lot of cyber insurance companies and brokers, but the industry is really up for grabs right now. It's totally being redesigned. Some insurance companies are coming in saying you have to meet these, you know, list of items before we're even going to give you a policy.
I've heard people being rejected, and I've heard two carriers who have left the market.
Correct.
Okay. So, here's something that's interesting and related to what you're saying. I had a wonderful conversation with a senior editor from the Pew Stateline publication.
Yep.
And what she was telling me is that she understands there are three states that are now considering banning locality, state and local government, from paying ransomware.
Yep.
And this was kind of interesting because when you map out that the implications, I mean, it sounds like, well, that could help. But then you start looking at the implications. No cyber insurance company in the world would insure with their hands tied. And if they did, it would be unaffordable. Because imagine they would lose the ability to say, you know what? It'd be cheaper to pay off the ransomware than for us to pay the cost of restoration. And that's what they make those decisions, you know, based on risk and time. But if their hands were tied, all of a sudden, I don't think insurance would be found in those states. Have you heard about these legislative initiatives too?
Absolutely. And yeah. I've heard of four states actually that it's been talking about this. So yeah, I think you and I probably talked to the same reporter on this. And I,
yeah, okay.
You know, I think that I would just say that, you know, I understand that the intentions are really good with these legislators, so I don't want to critique the
oh, yeah.
I think everyone's trying to, yes. to solve yes. this. There is no silver bullet. At the same time, I don't believe it's really going to work to just outlaw paying the ransom because, you know, the example I like to use, Alan, is like, you know, if my daughter were kidnapped and a trip to Mexico City, I mean, certainly no one wants to see anybody kidnapped. No one wants to see this happen. No one wants to advocate for any of that. But if my daughter were kidnapped and passing a law saying that you can't, you know, you can't pay the ransom for your daughter for the broader good of the Western Hemisphere or something, you know, for future ransomware victims, I think it's penalizing the victim. And so, in the case of small governments, if they're shut down and there's no way to get it back and the government's down, it could end up costing more money by not paying the ransom. So it's a very difficult thing. I understand why they're trying to take the incentives out by passing these laws. I'm not sure that, that's really going to have the result that people think it's going to have if indeed those laws pass.
Well, I certainly fully agree. And we're going to leave it there. We could go on for another couple of hours. So I think I'm going to have you back in a few weeks or months, but continue the conversation. We've been listening to Dan Lorman. I can't thank him enough for coming back and sharing his practical words of wisdom, sharing his insights. You have been listening to CompTIA Shark Bites. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you get your dose of podcasts. And as a reminder, keep in mind, PTI will be hosting its annual Cyber Leader Summit on October 27th. And until next time, this is Alan Shark saying, be safe physically and digitally. Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Alan. Appreciate it.
This has been a production of PTI, the Public Technology Institute. To learn more, visit pti.org.